Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
So many great barbecues on the 4th of July. All that corn on the cob and chicken, burgers, ribs. I made Greek ribs myself. I can't eat candied ribs these days, you know, so lemon, garlic, pepper, salt, rosemary. It worked out. But just like you, there are red, white, and blue napkins and red, white, and blue plates. And if you were hosting, then you still have those 4th of July napkins for the leftovers, don't you? And so wiping your mouth with red, white, and blue, patting your belly and telling your wife and kids or your husband, "Oh, I ate too much." I hope you took a few minutes to remember what the day was all about. The Declaration of Dependence. This is the new declaration, the Declaration of Dependence, and it replaces that old one written by old white men who now, according to what I read in the media and hear from politicians, have been thoroughly and properly discredited. We're ashamed of them now. They're only good for talking about liberty and fighting wars, and no one wants wars, thank God, and liberty is so challenging and scary that we had to write a new one. No one in their right mind would kneel when this new one is being read, except for those in love and rapture for our new reality. And please don't tell me you don't know our new American Declaration of Dependence. It goes like this. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created toxic, but that all of us, women, children, and even those toxic men, are endowed by their state with certain unalienable rights, and that among these are the right of a handout, and the right to band together in great numbers, and vote to take the property and wealth from those who have more than do we, and the right of comfort from the state, and the right of the embrace of government, and freedom from ideas that challenge us, and the right of safe spaces or sanctuary from those who may threaten us with their subversive thoughts. And that to secure these rights, our government gives added weight to the most populous states, New York, California, since our leaders, in their wisdom, have eliminated the rights of Midwestern and rural states, which fostered such unseemly views about liberty. And these violate the sensibilities of the many. And so, from our government, we derive other rights as well. The right to dox and shame subversives. The right to rewrite history. The right to be herded like livestock. The right to follow only certain laws and not others. The right to diminish and obliterate the notion of citizenship to one nation, as we are citizens of all nations of the earth. Is that what they pledged their lives and sacred honor for on July 4th, 1776? Did they sign a declaration of dependence to the state? Think about it as you look at that plate, that red, white, and blue plate with the rib bones and the chicken bones and the corn cobs and the remains and the red, white, and blue napkin you just wiped your lips with. There's plenty to talk about today with my good friend Tom Bevan, co-founder and publisher of Real Clear Politics. And before we go on, I just, you know, mention to you, we need your help. The Chicago Way podcast is growing every day. We're getting great reviews, but we need more. We want to extend it. We want to keep going. Jeff and I don't get paid for this. We just like talking to you. We hope you like it too. So if you like what you listen to, what you like what you hear, please download it, tell your friends, subscribe, and write us some kick-ass reviews on iTunes, okay? Jeff Carlin is here, executive producer of the Rokon Show with Anna DeVolantis. And me, I'm John Cass, husband, father, devoted son of liberty, columnist for the Chicago Tribune and member of that newspaper's editorial board. And you? And you? Preparing for or relaxing from that 4th of July barbecue? Sitting there on your deck listening to us? Cigar maybe in your hand? Puffing on a fine Maduro from Nicaragua? You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
Yeah, you do love the podcast. Admit it. You know, don't admit it to anyone but yourself when you're in your car looking in the rear view mirror. Look in your eyes and say, you know, at a red light, you know, be careful when you're driving. At a red light, look in your eyes and say, you know what? I really like listening to Jeff Carlin and John Cass. And you'd be right. And if you really like to listen to us, well, Jeff has some breaking news. Jeff?
Yes, for all our listeners and subscribers and fans, John and I are going to be doing a live version of the podcast on this thing called radio. I don't know if everybody's heard of it, but on WGN, that'll be July 12th, 7 to 8:30 Central between Rococho and White Sox Baseball. We're going to do it's Friday, and it should be a lot of fun. We've got some interesting guests lined up already, hopes, and it's going to be Friday, so it'll be a little less heavy. You know, we try to do a little bit more fun. But,
right. Will we have the Canarble wagon?
Canarble wagon will already have rolled, so we'll be able to dial into it a little bit.
Okay.
What's left in the studio.
Just bitters. I just demand bitters with my gin and tonic and lime, you know, on a hot July evening.
Yes, and perfect. We have to get some lime.
Right.
But it should be fun. It'll be, you know, 90 minutes of thoughtful interaction.
And also goofiness. And if you guys have questions or something, please call in. I think maybe we might take some calls.
Absolutely. And if you do want to tune in, like I said, the 12th, WGNradio.com, anywhere you are, you'll be able to live stream it if you have internets, as they say, or on the WGN app, which is where you can also get the podcast.
Or you could just turn your damn radio on.
Or if you're in the listening vicinity. Exactly. We'd love to have you listen live and call in, you know, ask us questions. We could talk. We're going to do a little bit of food. We'll do some politics. We'll do some history. It should be a lot of fun.
Castle history. Yes. There's the people that know the true secrets of you know, what's in on my brain may be here to basically break bad on me and tell all sorts of naughty stories things I did.
Well,
so we hope you're there. In the meantime, Jeff, before we get into, we're going to have Tom Bevan on in a few minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm fascinated to always have him on because his mind is so precise. He's just, I don't know what it is. He's just, he thinks clearly and he speaks clearly, and there you go.
Tom's able to take my rambling questions at him.
Mine too.
And then distill them into a substantive response that I'm like, yes, exactly. That's what I was trying to say. Thanks, Tom. You're the best.
But before we get to him, I need to ask you, do you see the American people as understanding the Declaration of Independence, or do you see them as embracing a Declaration of Dependence?
Well, I don't think that they realize it, but I think that the Declaration of Independence, as most people prescribe to it now, is the idea that I have all these rights and freedoms to be, you know, the best of the best and do and whatever I want and be whoever I want and live wherever I want. And that the government is supposed to do that, is to make sure that happens. And that doesn't make any sense. And that's absolutely the antithesis of what the Declaration of Independence means. I mean, that was the idea that you're free from the tyranny of government and free from the crushing onslaught of taxes and everything that comes with a big, gigantic government.
But we want to be embraced. We want Uncle Feds not only to sit on our couch.
We want Uncle Feds to be our couch.
To be the couch. We want to sit in his big lap and have like Aqualung.
right.
to wrap his arms around us and hug us, and we can smell his sour wine breath, and he to feed us, to nurture us. This is, I come to the caning idea that if the founders came back and saw what we do with our liberty, that they would take a cane to our behinds immediately.
Absolutely.
Right?
Oh, I mean, from the ruling class that controls everything, and I'm not just talking politicians, I'm talking lobbyists and professional governmental types and all these people.
Facebook, that, right, Twitter.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And even those, at least to a slightly lesser extent, are their own endeavors that have built these worlds in the sense organically in their own right, that people were brought to them. They weren't forced into it. So that is one thing. But it's this whole idea, this culture now, where we pick and choose what we think is the great pieces of every little thing, including things like the Constitution and Declaration of Independence, or laws, or
follow the laws we want. So
right.
The laws that say, I get where Kamala Harris says she says stop the food fight because we have to put food on their tables. No, Senator Harris, that's not your job. Okay, your job is not to put food on my table. That's my job.
Right.
I know, but you know. People forget sometimes. Okay, joining us now, as we celebrate the Declaration of Independence that our forefathers signed, giving us and the government the right over us and dominion over us, is Tom Bevin, co-founder and publisher of Real Clear Politics. Have a great Day of Dependence Day, Tom.
Why, thank you, Mr. Cass. It's great to be with you.
Speaking of this, dependence, I was watching with interest the Democratic debate and the news that's come out since then, and the word liberty never comes up. Is that, am I missing something?
Oh, well, you know, the Democrats speak about liberty in a different way. If you remember Bernie Sanders' speech where he was defending socialism, he said things like, you're not free if you don't have health care. You're not free if you don't have, you know, a living wage, $15 an hour living wage. So Democrats speak about freedom, but they speak about it in the context of government guaranteeing you certain things so that you may be able to live more freely, which obviously Republicans take a differing view, that government is sort of the antithesis of freedom. It restricts freedom, and the less of it that you have, the more actual liberty that you enjoy.
Hit it on the head there, Tom, because I think that's the whole look at what the DNC has put forth in this election cycle. Is it's like this sliding carnival ride to the left, to dependence on the government for everything. There was nothing in anyone's speeches or comments about, hey, we need to cut costs and make the government more efficient and do better at being a government and protecting people's rights. But no, it was all about this. We got to make sure everybody's got everything they need, including internet and education and debt forgiveness.
And don't forget health care for illegals. Tom Bevin, how's that playing? Raise your hand. I mean,
Yeah. If
they could not have done a better job, the party leaders of the Democratic Party, I think, are Rachel Maddow and the Caesar guy with the Caesar haircut. What's his name? The other day I was
Chuck
on
Todd.
Chuck Todd.
Oh, Chuck Todd.
Because they're the ones who framed it. Do you want, and Savannah Guthrie, of course, do you want, should illegal aliens have health care? And they all raise their hands. Is that not a visual that we'll see in some sort?
Certainly. Look, I think, you know, Phil Wegman, our White House reporter, and I were down in Miami, and we wrote a winners and losers analysis after the second night of debates. And one of our winners was illegal immigrants. I mean, if you are a resident in America illegally, you saw the Democrats propose to, first of all, decriminalize border crossings. That's Julian Castro and the debate that he got into with Beto O'Rourke. Make it a civil penalty, not a criminal penalty. That you will, if you are currently here illegally and you haven't committed a crime other than coming into the country illegally, that is, you may stay free for as long as you want. They would not be deported in any way. It's de facto amnesty, basically. And obviously, they want to try and pass a pathway to citizenship for those folks. But absent that, they're willing to let them stay here forever. And then to give health care to folks who are here illegally. All 10 folks who were on that stage raised their hand when they were asked whether their health care plans would cover illegal immigrants. So it really is a situation where you have it's effectively open borders. I mean, the thing, and this goes back to government, you know, the Democrats have very much criticized President Trump for the way that he's handled things, but they, you know, they refuse to criticize President Obama, who did many of the same things. He deported a couple million, 3 million, I think, illegal immigrants. He had detention centers at the border. There were families that were separated, but none of the Democrats will even acknowledge that the asylum laws are a problem, that they're being abused, that they need reform. That is not, when they talk about immigration reform, they talk about, one, the thing that they've passed, which is protection for Dreamers and the temporary protected status folks, and two, this, you know, grand vision of comprehensive immigration reform, which includes, you know, pathway to citizenship and all that. So there's just, they're not even willing to criticize the government when it needs reform and it's clearly being abused. So, but that's just where we are. And I agree with you, John. I think it's a huge gift to President Trump, especially in the states that are going to matter among independent voters. I mean, if you think about Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania and North Carolina, Florida, you know, Democrats in those states will be fired up to vote against Trump. Republicans will be fired up to vote for Trump, but independents, are they going to look at those policy proposals by Democrats and be like, yeah, that's exactly where I want to go. That's exactly how I want our country to be spending my taxpayer dollars. I just don't know about that. I think Democrats did give Trump a real advantage on that issue.
We've already seen in the past several hours or days that the Democrats are trying to clean up what happened during the debate by kind of shaping, you know, reshaping, recasting their policy. You saw it on the Sunday shows. And again, for everybody, I don't watch the Sunday shows, but I do because I have other things to do, like go to church and see my family and have a cigar on the deck. But I do go to Real Clear Politics, which distills all the Sunday shows for me, so I can just, you know, get the best parts.
The highlights,
clips, right? Yeah. But do you see that? Do you see that kind of skin? Maybe they don't want to skin back and admit that they were wrong, but they do want to reshape and recast as they move forward.
Well, Kamala Harris was on a show, I think it was Morning Joe, the day after the debate, with Willie Geist was asking her about exactly that, about she also raised her hand saying she would take away, she would be one of two people that were on that stage that would take away private insurance from 180 million Americans, right? Her health care plan.
Another genius.
And which she had already gotten in trouble for this earlier in the campaign, right after she did her rollout. She was on at a CNN town hall and said, yeah, we'll do away with all that stuff, you know, fighting with insurance companies and all that. And she had to walk it back. Well, she did it again. She basically said, well, I just didn't hear the question. That's not what I heard. So, you know, that's not what my plan would do. And we're going to blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, in Kamala Harris's instance, she will just literally deny the truth of what she did and just basically say, well, I didn't hear the question properly or whatever. I'm not sure if that's going to fly with people or not, but we'll have to see. But again, it presents a real problem for Democrats if you go across the board on things like immigration, healthcare. Healthcare is the number one issue in the election right now. It's above the economy in almost every poll, and in some polls, like by a lot. But the economy was the other thing. I mean, Democrats are trying to make this argument because it's that this economy is not working for everybody, that there's massive income inequality, and the rich are getting richer, and the poor aren't getting any raises. That is at odds with the data in terms of, you know, 70% of folks think the economy is pretty darn good, and over half of Americans, and again, this is half of Americans of all stripes, right? From low wage workers to high wage workers to, you know, middle income families across America, they're all seeing their financial situation improve, and it has improved over the last couple of years. So again, I'm not sure that Democrats, how far they're going to get with the economic argument. If the economy stays strong, obviously, if it doesn't, that will start to resonate with folks that, you know, hey, this economy isn't really working for me. It was for a couple of years, but now it's not. That could be a real problem for Trump. But right now, they're kind of denying reality when they talk about the economy.
And because I think in terms of the economy, it's doing well. But in terms of healthcare, a great number of people who've come out and vote, baby boomers, are worried about dying, and they want to have healthcare, right? And they want to be protected throughout. And I don't know if taking, taking people off their private insurance, which is something that they really want to contemplate. People don't want to contemplate big changes to stuff like that.
They don't. And what's interesting about the data on that, which is it's kind of the same effect that we see with Congress, right? Which is, how well do you like Congress? If you ask anyone, and everyone says, I hate Congress, they're terrible. Well, how do you like your congressman? Oh, I like him just fine. He's pretty good, actually, right? So there's this disconnect. When people say, what do you think of the U.S. health insurance system? Oh, it's terrible. It's broken. Has to be reformed. A lot needs to be done. Well, how do you feel about your own personal health insurance? I like it a lot. It's actually pretty good, right? So people have a distorted view of the system, which they think is broken, needs reform. But in their own personal circumstance, they like their insurance. They get to see their doctors. They don't have to wait. They don't have to. I mean, yes, people have some, they have some gripes about, dealing with insurance companies and the like. But that is not, that's the exception rather than the rule. And so to your point, John, I think Democrats, they run that risk when they say, listen, we're going to take 180 million people off of the healthcare that they, most of them seem to really enjoy. And we're going to put them on a government plan. And they may or may not be able to see their doctor. They may or may not be able to get that knee replacement that they have been, wanting, or they might have to wait 6 months to get it. And there was only one voice on the stage over two nights who said, I don't think that's a really good idea. And that was John Delaney, the congressman from Maryland, who's at 1% in the polls and considered a, $2 billion to one shot to win the nomination. I think Michael Bennett said something similar to that on the second night. Uh-huh. But for the most part, the voices up there preaching that kind of moderation are few and far between.
So as the Democratic Party, the base of the party, becomes angrier and farther to the left, their own leaders cannot stand up and say, wait a minute, there is a better way. They just can't, because to do that denies them the vote in the primaries. And so the American people see this. And they see, they know that Trump's erratic and a boor, but they see the other side too, and that's just as scary to them. And as long as the economy is doing well, I think the Democrats do not do themselves a service by pulling the wings off poor Joe Biden as he's cringing and screaming in pain like that fly in that movie. Help me,
In his Kamala Harris T-shirt with the. That little girl is me.
I shouldn't have done. Did I? Was that overkill?
I loved it. I thought it was great. And hey, you are a master at evoking imagery, and that was one that made me laugh out loud. Look, this is going to be really interesting. I mean, one of the reasons Trump got elected in the first place, I mean, yes, because he was an outsider, he was outside of politics and all of that. But the other piece of that was that Hillary Clinton was just a massively unlikable candidate. Trump was too, but at the end of the day, there were a lot of people who just could not bring themselves to vote for Hillary and decided to give Trump a shot. So fast forward to 2020, who's the nominee going to be? Are they going to be more likable than Trump? Because, a lot of times, I mean, the dirty little secret about this, our election process, and you guys know this, is we can talk about policies all we want, but sometimes it just comes down more to gut instinct and character. Does this person, do I like this person? Do I want to have a beer with them? Do I think they understand me and have my best interests at heart? And do they reflect my values? Do they care about people like me? Those kind of emotionally based questions end up driving a decent amount of what happens in our elections. And so, who are the Democrats going to nominate, and how are those people going to wear over the course of a general election? Because, I mean, Kamala Harris is, and John, we talked about this the other day on my radio show, which is she is tough and she is aggressive. And we've seen that in these congressional hearings where she has just gotten after, witnesses. And some would say she's been, too aggressive and over the top. And she went after Joe Biden. She was standing 4 feet away from him. I mean, she will stab you in the chest. She's not going to stab you in the back. And how's that going to wear over time with the general election if she's up there bashing Trump and getting after him? And And I don't know. We'll see. Maybe that'll redound to her benefit among, you know, Democratic voters, but maybe independents, that might turn them off a little bit. I mean, I just don't know. Well, it depends very much on who the Democrats nominate, as much as we talk about policy issues.
To that point, I think it's interesting because in your listing and write-ups on the winners and losers of this, the DNC debate, number two is Pete Buttigieg there in that listing, right behind Kamala. And she kind of puts out this idea where it's, like you said, she's bruising, she's tough, she's going to be able to go toe-to-toe with a Biden and you know, Bernie, and kind of push the back on the stuff they're trying to give us, this utopian idea. But I feel like she could lead through as a sledgehammer, and then it comes down to her and like a Buttigieg. Do we want somebody who's like an outsider who we don't really feel like we could trust watching our kids or our dog, and a little bit softer, essentially the opposite of Trump, or do we go to a Kamala? But I think the craziest piece of all this is that, have we ever seen an election where there's the idea that a moderate could come in late and essentially peel off some electorate and split the left? Because it's always gone the other way. It's always been some far left, you know, or far right comes in and peels off voters. So then that side of the wing of the party or wing of the political is gone. Like they don't show up.
Yeah. It's a good point. It's interesting. I mean, I do think Mayor Pete, when you see him up there on the stage, I mean, there's no question why he's getting attention and buzz. I mean, he's when he talks about issues, he's very obviously very smart, very articulate, but he talks about issues in a way that's very thoughtful and does not come across as like canned lines or platitudes or cliches. And that resonates with folks. And you know, he just announced, I don't know, $24.8 million for his second quarter fundraising number. So he's definitely in the mix, and I think he probably did himself a bit of a favor in Miami in terms of getting his campaign back on track. But listen, this race is so wide open, and John knows this. My fantasy scenario as the proprietor of a political website is a contested convention where you have all these folks head to Milwaukee, and it's just absolute chaos. And then in the sort of coup de grace, the you know, masterstroke moment, Michelle Obama drives up the 94 tollway and
with Oprah,
with Barack, and they pull into, you know, the Bradley Center or whatever, and come into rapturous applause, and the coronation is complete. And, you know, I mean, that would be something. I still don't think it's completely out of the question, as much as, you know, I mean, it's mostly out of the question, but not 100% out of the question. That, and it could be Michelle Obama, or it could be someone else, like an Oprah or somebody. If Democrats can't settle on someone, you know, it's they could, and the way that the primaries are set up with a proportional allocation of delegates, you know, if somebody doesn't take hold of this race and start winning a bunch of states, you could have a situation where you've got, you know, two to three or maybe even four folks who end up making it all the way to the convention, which would be, I mean, outrageous, but also, as I said, great for business.
Yeah, I think your Obama, Michelle Obama scenario is right on, because I've always thought that she wanted to be president. And when you said that on the Chicago Way about a year and a half ago,
the day after the election,
you predicted it. I thought, man,
if that comes to pass, John, I'm going to need a copy of that tape, because I'm going to have to, like, I'm going to pin it to my forehead and wander around playing it over and over again.
Right,
because that will be the greatest call of all time.
They won't give you credit. You know, the people will not give Tom Bevin credit for this. But
sure they will. I'll make sure they do.
Here's the early line on 2020. You ready?
Yeah.
In order to get revenge for Donald Trump killing her husband's legacy and denying Hillary Clinton from becoming the first woman president, to get revenge for both of those things, Michelle Obama may in fact run for president. How about that?
What are you telling me? We talked about this over the last lunch you bought. Oh, sorry, full disclosure, you paid.
Do you mind if we listen to some music? I rarely get to listen to music in the car.
Sure.
What you got?
I don't know. Let's see what we've got.
Crank it up.
Oh. Stevie. No way.
Did you know that Stevie Wonder is my favorite?
He's the best.
Like a fool, I went and stayed too long. But I'm wondering if your love's still strong. When the time I went and said goodbye,
And Tom, so one of the big things that really hung on in the last election cycle, obviously, was Hillary was being just this, you know, establishment politician, another Clinton, another. I mean, there were so many reasons not to like her. And then you had Trump also running on the fact that there was the control of the Supreme Court was is hanging in the balance. What do you see? We've already established the immigration thing is for sure going to be a strong and healthcare. But again, like you said, healthcare, a lot of people hate the system, but they're happy with their own. So they don't really push too hard one way or another. Maybe what do you see being the other big topics that are going to try to separate people or, you know, bring people together?
You know, there is, I mean, the Democrats really fundamentally, they agree with Trump on trade. So there's not, I mean, they disagree with his tactics, right, and his style, but they didn't want to be in the TPP. They wanted NAFTA done and renegotiated. So they're really not, there's not a lot of room, not a lot of daylight for them to criticize Trump on trade, not a lot of room to criticize Trump on foreign policy. Again, they can ding him for, you know, oh, he loves dictators and despots and, you know, Vladimir Putin, he sucks up to him and Kim Jong-un and all that. But in terms of policy, you know, Democrats really can't get very far to the left of Trump in being more sort of anti-war and anti-interventionist. He's been very cautious, and I think that's where the middle of the country is. And so, but so it would come down to other cultural issues. It'll come down to the Supreme Court. It'll come down to abortion. That's another big one that folks will be talking about. It'll come down to guns, perhaps. You know, those are issues that are hot button issues for certain slices of the electorate, but they do not move the needle when it comes to the final analysis. Democrats will push, obviously, environmentalism, climate change, all that stuff. Trump's a science denier, you know, the Green New Deal, all of that. But the folks who are going to go out and vote solely on the issue of climate are not big enough to matter. It'll be. The economy, it'll be immigration, and it'll be healthcare. I mean, those are kind of the big three, and everything else below that will, you know, it'll matter in the margins, perhaps, but it'll sort of fold into the overall mix.
And you, one of the things you've seen, especially on, if you watch CNN ever or any of the left leaning MSNBC types, is that there's this focus on, you know, farmers in the Midwest who are getting crushed by bad weather, which Dems, if they're smart, could turn that into a, you know, a climate thing to try to pull people who are generally more conservative to their side. But that's a really tough putt. And they're getting hammered by, you know, trade deal stuff that they say is, you know, not working for them yet. And that's what Trump keeps putting out there. Do you see any cachet of Democrats like coring in, all of a sudden showing up in the heartland in places where they would never show up before and trying to push that essential weakness and push that forward and try to turn minds?
Yeah, sure. I mean, certainly, again, in Iowa, they're talking to farmers all the time, and they're trying to, you know, visiting Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. I mean, are they going to be going to Wyoming and Nebraska and Kansas? No. Should they be going to those places? I mean, in this, look, they have limited time and limited resources, and they can't be everywhere at once. And so that's why they're not, you know, it doesn't make sense. I think in a general election, though, whoever the nominee is should be going to all those places and should be making the case. If Democrats want to try and win back some of those voters, they need to try and, you know, make the case. I mean, I think we'll see Democrats going in the general election, going to places like Texas and Georgia and Arizona to try and, even if those states are perhaps a little bit out of reach, but they will be trying to, I assume they'll be making the case. And the question is, you know, how authentic is it? There's this thing about Trump that's really interesting. I mean, for a guy who's sort of the orange, you know, real estate billionaire from Manhattan who's a reality TV star, the way that he talks, and I don't know if it's the Queens in him, the, you know, the sort of brash guy, he's plain spoken. I mean, he throws around insults and he, you know, doesn't mind mixing it up with folks. That resonates with, he's made a connection with those folks, and those folks will be open to, especially if they're suffering from Trump's policies like tariffs or whatever, they'll be open to looking at an alternative. Remember, some of these folks voted for Obama in 2008 or 2012 or both, so it's not like they're opposed to voting for Democrats. And the question is, well, what's the alternative going to look like? Does Elizabeth Warren going to a farm, you know, is she going to be able to connect with voters? I mean, she is from Oklahoma. She can kind of speak the language, so maybe that's not as far-fetched as it seems. is Kamala Harris, who was born in, you know, Oakland, California, and has been a blue state West Coaster her whole time. Is she going to be able to go to a farm in Iowa and talk the talk? I mean, this is what happened with, you know, Rudy Giuliani, famously, who was the poll leader in the Republican primary, and he couldn't make that connection with those kind of voters, and he suffered because of it. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Trump has absolutely, though, he is signaling every day to farmers. He just did the other day, you know, China's buying all these soybeans, and I got your back, and I'll never stop working for you, and our farmers are great. But he's definitely pushing his message, trying to keep them as close to him as he can. But invariably, some will be pried away, and the question is just how many, and that's a function of who the Democrats nominate.
One thing we haven't talked about, which is coming up in the next few weeks, may be the reason why so many in our business and the media have been so anti-Trump and so negative. And I've always thought that it might have something to do with the fact that, Hillary Clinton and the Democratic National Committee colluded, can I use that word, with many members of the media to ensure that she would get the nomination over Bernie Sanders. And that once that became clear that that had been done through the release of emails, they had a choice, either accept responsibility or direct the anger to someone else like Trump, which is what we saw. And now we're coming to the end of the Mueller report, I guess, the beginnings of the Barr report and the Horowitz report. And just a note for all of you out there, you should read Real Clear Politics because they have some great stuff in there. Here's one, Real Clear Investigations by Eric Felton, Insinuendo. A famous Chicago word coined by Mayor Richard J. Daley. Insinuendo, why the Mueller report doth repeat so much. I would wonder, Tom, where do you think the William Barr investigation, the Horowitz, all that stuff, where does that go? And how are the politics going to play out?
You know, that's a good question, John. I mean, look, Mueller's going to testify publicly before two committees on, I think, the 17th of July. So coming up in a couple of weeks. You know, he said in his press conference that he gave that he was not going to go beyond the four corners of the report if he was called to testify. So we'll see whether Democrats or Republicans can get him to do that and make any sort of news. Otherwise, this is just, you know, Democrats have framed this like they said, you know, nobody reads the book, meaning the Mueller report, but they all want to go see the movie. And so this is going to be the movie. It's going to be Mueller basically narrating the report. But Democrats hope this will give a different, it'll be replayed on all these cable networks and yada, yada, yada. And somehow this is going to, I don't know, bring more awareness to the issue, change minds. I doubt it. It's not going to happen. I mean, this is a political show. It is meant to really do very, very little. I think the Horowitz report, even if it's damning in a way that's shocking to many folks, I don't think it's going to change any minds. I mean, I don't think Democrats are going to be suddenly like, oh, you know what? You know, Trump was right all along. There is a deep state and they were working to screw him from the day that, you know, from the get go. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Republicans will be like, told you. So independents, you know, maybe they'll move on the margins back in favor of Trump or, you know, away from Trump based on Mueller. But I mean, it's just the public is so desensitized to all this stuff. And not to mention the fact that, and you hear this from these candidates, I mean, they're not getting asked about it on the trail. Voters out there don't care about this. Voters in Iowa don't care about it. I mean, even in my neighborhood, and I live in a very liberal neighborhood in Illinois, people don't talk about it anymore. They don't care about it. I mean, it's over. It's done. And I think the Democrats, this is the risk they face, is because, you know, the Twitter, you know, pundit class and the folks inside the Beltway, they are still remain obsessed with this and obsessed over, should we impeach? Should we not impeach? Is this our constitutional duty and oversight and yada, yada, yada. Every day that they do that, the media inside the bubble, that's what they report. They don't report about Nancy Pelosi talking about healthcare or a bill that the Democrats passed or whatever. It's all about Jerry Nadler and you know, what his committee did, and oh, you know, representatives set up a, you know, bucket of fried chicken, and look at that. Yeah, I mean, it's just it's insanity, right? But and so there's this real disconnect between what's going on in Washington with the Democrats and what's going on in the rest of the country. So these Mueller's testimony and the Horowitz report and the Barr report are all going to be major, major news stories inside the Beltway. They will fill cable news. There will be ink spilled by the, I don't know what we call it these days, right? Not the barrel, but the pixel full.
Yeah, by
the bite.
But at the end of the day, I just don't know that it's going to make any difference. Trump has this whole debate between, you know, Donald Trump, his fans, and the folks in the resistance have so hardened the sort of partisan sides, the tribal nature of things, that regardless of what these reports say, I don't think anybody's going to change sides or change their minds or whatever. It's just going to be more of the same.
And to borrow a phrase from 2016 to discuss Trump's proclivities, it's baked in the cake already. I mean, that's how everybody, I think you're right, on the left too. I mean, I see it in my own circles that, you know, that there's just this pounded with the head with it for so long. They're like, eh, yeah, both sides did terrible things. We think may or may not, who knows, but let's talk about, you know, corn and taxes and people coming across the border
and legalized pot. Tom, yeah. Bevin, you're a dad. I just need to know before we go, is your house going to be a bong house, a hookah house, or a edible, you know, gummy bear house?
A non-smoking environment in this house.
Oh, so you're going to have gummy bears on the coffee table next to the...
We are a smoke-free environment. No, you know, it's funny because my wife is much more passionate about this issue than I am, and she constantly is like, you know, griping. She said, you know, we just spent... You know, how many decades, how many years trying to get kids to not smoke cigarettes? And now we're basically encouraging, you know, and everybody for that matter, right? And now we're turning around and encouraging folks to start smoking again. It's just a different product. But so that drives her crazy, and it's not it doesn't go over well in our house.
In our house as well, it doesn't go over
The government needs money, John, so they're going to do whatever they got to do, right?
I think, you know...
Got to have the money.
In 50 years or so, 60 years, when we're all besotten with drugs, the Shaolin priests will come out of their mountain hideaways and lead a rebellion. Oh, I'm sorry. Wrong country. Wrong century. Thanks for being here, Tom.
You bet. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
See ya. For Tom Bevin, co-founder and publisher of Real Clear Politics, and you can... get to his fine website on the internet, and I think you should just go to it and see all the stuff there, including Real Clear Investigations.
Absolutely. Go there every morning. I highly can't recommend it enough.
The Tribune?
The Tribune.
Tribune.com and Real Clear Politics, my first two stops.
A great balanced view of what's out there.
And also, obviously, for Jeff Carlin, executive producer of The Rokon Show with Anna DeVellantis. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist for the Chicago Tribune, member of its editorial board. And remember that on July 12th, we're going to be live on WGN, right?
WGN Radio, the big 720.
You know what? What we're going to do? We're going to do the Chicago way on WGN.